this is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from ecologist and author Sandra Steingraber, who speaks tomorrow night at Kalamazoo College. But first, NPR's weekly quiz program, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is coming to Kalamazoo next week. Peter Sagal has hosted that program since 1998. WMUK's Aaron Williams spoke with Peter Sagal.
I know that you are a playwright. You are also a writer and an author. You're also a host of this little talk show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Which one of these do you feel is closest to your spirit?
I actually have learned to accept certain things about myself. Whatever I'm doing, I kind of wish I was doing something else, which is why I've done so many things in my life. I was writing plays, right? And I was being a very serious playwright. And then this radio show started to poke its head out in its very early days back in the late 90s. And I said, well, that would be so much better than sitting around all day by myself and writing plays and laboring with my muse. It would be fun to go on the radio and be funny and up to the minute and off the cuff and be able to do a new show every week. Wouldn't that be great? Now I've been doing this radio show for 16 years. And I'm like, you know, it'd be great to sit in my darkened basement and wrestle with my muse. That would be so much better. So I'm always sort of looking for the next thing.
How do you keep it fresh every week when you do have Wait, Wait on your agenda? How do you keep that fresh and keep that beat going and keep the audience engaged?
I have two great advantages. The advantage is, A, that I have a huge and constantly overflowing source of material, i.e. current events. There will never be an end to the stupidity provided by the news and the people who make the news until the ending of the world, as Shakespeare might say. And the other tremendous advantage, B, is that I work with really tremendously funny, talented people. And even though I might be tired, old, and stale, they are never, you know. So whenever we do a new show and I look to my left, given our stage configuration there on my left, and I see the panelists who they might be that particular evening, I know that while I'm pretty bored with what I have to say, what they're going to say is going to be pretty great. And usually... And this, I think, is the appeal of our show, actually, when it really boils down to it. You never quite know what's going to happen. I don't either. I don't know what the panelists are going to say. I don't know what the listeners are going to say. I don't know what our special guest, or not my job guest, is going to say. And that kind of, you know, surprise, really, is what I think gives our show its particular appeal.
When the show is traveling, what elements do you try to bring from Chicago to the road? Like, what do you try to kind of keep going and show people what they're missing when you guys are traveling around the country?
It's a strange story. When the show began, we all came to Chicago from around the country. I was living in New York. Our executive producer, Mike Danforth, was in Minnesota. People came from various places. And, you know, so none of us are Chicago natives. So it's weird to think that we have sort of a Chicago idea, you know, or Chicago identity. We actually started doing the shows live on the road. For the first 7 years of the show, when we were in Chicago, we did it in a studio without a live audience. Then we started doing these special events for stations or cities where we'd go and do a show in front of a live audience in a theater. We called them road shows and live shows. And in fact, it was that experience of being out on the road with people, including some shows in Michigan, like Ann Arbor a couple times, Ypsilanti once, Detroit and the Ford Theater, where we actually figured out, wow, we should do this every week. So now we have a theater in Chicago. We're kind of bringing the spirit of the road and, you know, another opening, another show, if you will, to our weekly show. So we're grateful to the audiences out in America for sort of giving us a kick in the butt and telling us we should be doing that every week.
What do you do if the audience gets too rowdy? Do you ever have a moment where it's just like, guys,
fire
guys.
Hoses?
Oh,
fire
my
hoses. Basically, we have enormous bouncers. We have a long-term contract with the Hells Angels. We thought they did a great job at Altamont some years ago at all times. This is particularly a danger with Carl. Carl, as you know, Carl Castle, international sex symbol. And we've had some problems of young women, not entirely, also a lot of young men who are less than well-informed, I'll say, but enthusiastic, leaping the stage, often tearing their clothes off, or Carl's. So we've had to cage him. No, this is public radio. People don't clap too loud because they're afraid of distracting us. Let me say this. If anybody who is coming to our show in Kalamazoo is listening to this right now, act up. Go nuts. Be crazy. Take off your shirt and paint your chest with our logo. That would be awesome.
One thing that I know that you do is you often make podcast and or show cameos. Like, I have heard you on The Splendid Table.
Yes.
I have heard you on Ask Me Another. I've heard you on The Sporkful. And it's like, oh, wow, Peter Sagal, what? It's just, I love how you kind of work the circuit within the circuit.
I, like everybody else, I think that I aspire to a position where I don't actually have to do any creative original work on my own, but simply show up and be a special guest.
And they love that. People that, love that.
It's so easy. It's like, oh, can you be in our... Oh, of course. I will show up and be in your podcast and respond amusingly to whatever you say. What a gig. You don't have to do anything. They're just so thrilled to have you. So it's great fun. We also are living in sort of the golden age of audio. Not radio, because it's not sent out by radio waves for the most part, but audio in the sense that anybody who wants to do a radio show, an audio show, a spoken word show, can do it. And whether or not they find an audience is entirely up to their energy and their talent. So, like, let's take The Sporkful, Dan Pashman's thing. It's really great fun. It's a great podcast about food and stuff, and I like his style, and it was a pleasure to go on and talk about that. And it's also fun, for my part, to talk about things other than people who stuffed 40 exotic eels down their pants before they tried to go through customs at Miami International. It's nice to express my other interests.
And you also participate in Sandwich Monday as well.
I participate in Sandwich Monday, which may, in the end, eclipse Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is the thing that I am most known for, is that I'm an occasional contributor to Sandwich Monday, which is a blog feature we do. It's now on The Salt, which is NPR's food blog, where every Monday, the staff of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, for your benefit, eats a disgusting sandwich of some kind or another, or other kind of weird food concoction that we find amusing, and tell you, make jokes about it. It's like you didn't know you needed that to someone to do that for you until we did. And now you're like, thank you.
I know that you're going to be giving your first commencement address at
I am.
Warren Wilson
You have been
College.
Googling me.
I have been. I do my work.
I appreciate that. I am nervous about that because usually I am expected to be funny but want to be profound. This time I'm going to be expected to be profound and want to be funny. And I'm not quite sure how to handle that, you know, because the day you graduate college is supposed to be a big day in your life. One of the big signal events, like your marriage, you know, your this, your that, your confirmation or bar mitzvah, depending. And you want it to be something they remember. And I am bitter about this because I went to Harvard, which has a lot of disadvantages. One of the advantages is you're supposed to get great commencement speakers, right? Like a few years before me, the graduating class had Kermit the Frog. Jim Henson's daughter, Lisa Henson, was graduating. And so I believe Jim Henson himself crouched behind the podium and Kermit the Frog, complete with cap and gown, delivered a commencement address. How cool is that? Who did we get? Class of 1987, Harvard University, Harvard College, Michael Dukakis. So what I do not want is I do not want the graduating class of 2014 at Warren Wilson College to spend the rest of their lives going, you know who I got? I got this quiz show guy. I mean, it was, I don't even, what? Well, who's that guy? I want it to be a good time for them. And I guess my message is, at least in my case, you get out of college, you've been in school your whole life, and you feel this tremendous pressure to get on with it. Oh my God, you're 23 years old. What are you going to do with your life? And what you don't, I think, realize, or I can realize for you, since I have the perspective of age, is you have this astonishing freedom right now to fail. Because nobody, and I speak in the general sense, there are vast exceptions. I know people who are supporting their families or their siblings or even their children at that age. But I mean, let us speak to those who have the really good fortune not to be in that situation, to be independent. You have freedom to fail, to try what you want to try, to travel, to try a place to live, to try a career, to try a profession. There's no need to find that track for your life that you're going to stick in for the rest of it, which you wouldn't want to do anyway, to go out there and fail and take advantage of that.
If the internet tells me correctly, you recently had a birthday.
I did.
You turned, may I say, is it 49?
It is. Isn't that amazing?
It's wonderful. And I wanted to know, do you have a before 50 list?
That is a good question. That number, far more, I have to say, than 30 and 40 were, is such a looming thing. You know, I mean, I mean, having been through turning 30 and turning 40, turning 30, there's a sense of relief. You know, it's like maybe I can finally get serious. Now I'm going to be a grown up. Turning 40, more of the same, still a sense of aging. But, you know, it's like 50 is like I'm an old man. And I apologize to all the people who are 50 and above who don't feel that way at all. But I don't know. I think that this is a benefit of living a chaotic and poorly planned life, which is that I've had so many ups and downs that I don't necessarily need to achieve anything else. Basically, what I'm wishing for myself at 50 is a little bit of calm at this point, which may be in and of itself a factor of age.
You are on the right track.
I think so.
What is something that we should look forward to when you do arrive in Kalamazoo?
The pleasure of our show is that you never know what's going to happen. A number of the people who come to see our shows, our live shows, often say to me, oh, you should just find a way to podcast or broadcast the whole thing because the whole 90-minute to 2-hour experience was so awesome and you have to cut it down to an hour for broadcast. To which my response was, well, if we did that, there'd be no reason to come see us live. So it's great fun. I won't say it's the same as seeing, you know, your favorite band jam, because none of us have any musical talent. But it is awfully fun to be there in the room with us as we have the fun that we are legitimately having. Also lasers. Yeah, also lasers. We have lasers. Well, not really, but maybe one day.
Peter Sagal is the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He spoke with WMUK's Aaron Williams. More information about next week's show at Miller Auditorium can be found at WMUK.org.